Good to see everybody back again today. We do have a number that are off traveling. We've got, I think, at least two, if not three, of our kids are in the state band competition, and so families are scattering out, and they'll be driving, and we sure want to be praying for their safety, and I hope they enjoy themselves. It's nice to have that. I, again, appreciate everybody who filled in my absence last week, especially Clay for preaching for me last Sunday night. We truly had a great time. It was nice to just get away and relax and be around water. I wouldn't want to live around water all the time because that means lots and lots and lots and lots and lots of people. So I do like living in an area where, as they say, if the wind blows hard enough, the Yankees will come and live here. But I really do love being able to get out and go visit parts of God's beauty. And again, as I mentioned this morning, one of the privileges we had was to be able to worship with two very faithful congregations. And that was something we really did enjoy. But one of the things I noticed was there's a concern right now as far as the congregations are just getting older and older without seeming to replenish with a good mix. And of course, that's something that works against itself. When you don't have a youth group, when somebody is coming to visit, or if you don't have a Bible class, when somebody's coming to visit, well, they'll go visit somewhere else because that's just one of the things that parents always have to look for and be concerned about is a support system for their kids. And so so you can understand that. But again, having said that, even though both these congregations were very small, there was a great deal of faithfulness within them. And that was one of the things that I believe is an encouragement. I believe if the churches can just hang on, that there will be a resurgence. As a matter of fact, I believe we need to do more than just hang on. And this is really kind of the key to what we want to be looking at. I think too often we're content with just surviving, just maintaining the status quo. If the attendance doesn't go down too much, if the contribution doesn't go down too much, whatever it is, then we're pretty happy. But as Christians, we shouldn't be looking to survive. We should be looking to thrive. We should have within us something that attracts other people to the church. There should always be that idea of seeking and saving the lost that's just really firmly on our heart that makes us want to just reach out to people and help them, not so that the numbers on the board can go up, but because there are people who need Christ. And again, as I mentioned in the bulletin this morning, if you looked at that, when we talk about faithfulness, I realize what a very small fraction of that is our worship and our Bible classes. And we don't want to get so hung up on that becomes the focus of our idea of faithfulness. But obviously, as we talk about the church, we are talking about the times that we get together as fellow Christians that make up the church within any community. And again, the thing that I just was really kind of overwhelmed with as we went and visited was how blessed we are here to be able to have such a mix of those who are older and wiser, who have been our base for so long, and yet the younger couples as well and the new life coming in. I really enjoyed getting to listen to little Copeland this morning as he was cooing back there. He wasn't making a menace of himself, and you couldn't hear him probably for more than one or two pews away, but that was life. And it's good to have life from the very beginning until the very last breath. Will we be faithful? We started off this morning, and I'll just touch on these verses. In Galatians chapter 5, we talked about the fact that the fruit of the Spirit is, among other things, faithfulness. And at the end of this passage, talking about the fruit of the Spirit, it says, "Since we live by the Spirit, let us keep in step with the Spirit." And this idea of keeping in step with the Spirit has everything to do with faithfulness. When we talk about faithfulness, we really are talking about the idea of trustworthiness, of a reliability. When we talk about our relationship with God, we are talking about our loyalty to God. Faithful. You know what it is that makes a faithful spouse, those of you who are married or who have been married and have been in good marriages. There's nothing like a relationship, a marriage, when both partners are faithful. And there's really nothing like it when one or both are not either. And so we can see the need for that. Let's keep in step with the Spirit. 3 John, we looked at again and talked about the fact that John in his latter years was writing to the church, and he was talking about how it gave him tremendous joy to hear of their faithfulness. And I've noticed that among some of our older people. I was thinking specifically of Alvin, who just whenever he hears of what somebody is doing, it just makes him smile. You can tell that there's joy there. And that's the same with so many. But here John is, the apostle who probably focused as much on love as any of them. And I realize again that he was inspired, but also he got to have his personality come out in his writings. That's why we see different writing styles. But the Holy Spirit had him dwell upon and allowed him to dwell upon love, and I'm sure directed him in that. And John just seemed to have a love for other people. And a big part of that, I believe, when he talks about having joy, when he hears about the faithfulness of some of his children or some of the brothers, is just that. It makes us happy. It should make us happy when we see faithfulness. And then we also looked at Matthew 23, where we looked at the fact that the Pharisees and the experts in the law were tithing of just the minutest things. And Jesus didn't condemn them for that, but he said, you should have caught the more important things. And then he said, you need to do the former without leaving the latter undone, or the latter without leaving the former undone. And this is something that really struck me. I am absolutely convinced that when we come together to worship, it needs to be as close of a faithful reflection to the Word and to what we see within the Word of the worship that God wanted us to have, that they were doing within the New Testament. But the thing that struck me was this. If we are doing everything right, but our heart is not in it, if there is not love, if there is not faithfulness, then those who are doing everything wrong, but they have love and they have faithfulness, obviously they don't have faithfulness and obedience, but what I mean is, while both situations are wrong, there's a superior situation. And that should not ever allow us to look at somebody who is worshiping wrong and say, well, at least they're faithful, they're doing better. That's not what I'm talking about. It ought to prick our hearts to understand that if we are doing everything right, but our heart's not in it, if there's not a faithfulness, how serious that is. Because if we started worshiping in an incorrect manner where we couldn't do it by faith, you know how you would feel. You know what you would have to do. And yet so often when we talk about the big things like justice, mercy, and faithfulness, we'll let those go. And we cannot do that. We have to be focused on those things. And again, tonight we're talking about faithfulness. And finally this morning we looked in Hosea, where God's charge against them was there was no faithfulness. It was a heavy charge. And that leads us into what we want to look at tonight, starting in Lamentations 3. You may have noticed that the very first song that we sang tonight that talked about the steadfast love of the Lord never ceases. Well, his mercies never come to an end. And then the idea of great is your faithfulness. This was a quote from Lamentations 3. But I want to back up to the very beginning of Lamentations chapter 3. We are looking at Jeremiah the prophet. Jeremiah was one who certainly warned them of the destruction that was going to come. They have been through the destruction, and now there is a lament being written. Now, Jeremiah also wrote a lament. I believe it's for King Hezekiah. I don't know if that's included within this, but I do know that this lament is just an agony over what has happened to Jerusalem and to the children of Israel being carried into captivity. And Jeremiah says this through inspiration. I am the man who has seen affliction under the rod of his wrath. He has driven and brought me into darkness without any light. Surely against me turns his hand again and again the whole day long. He has made my flesh and my skin waste away. He has broken my bones. He has besieged and enveloped me with bitterness and tribulation. He has made me dwell in darkness like the dead of long ago. He has walled me in so that I cannot escape. He has made my chains heavy. Though I call and cry for help, he shuts out my prayer. He has blocked my ways with blocks of stones. He has made my paths crooked. He is a bear lying in wait for me, a lion in hiding. He turned aside my steps and tore me to pieces. He has made me desolate. He has bent his bow and has set me as a target for his arrow. He drove into my kidneys the arrows of his quiver. I have become the laughingstock of all the people, the object of their taunts all day long. He has filled me with bitterness, has sated me with wormwood. He's made my teeth grind on gravel and has made me cower in ashes. My soul is bereft of peace. I have forgotten what happiness is. So I say, my endurance has perished. So is my hope from the Lord. I'm going to read the good part in just a moment. But I want to say this. I do not believe that America is God's chosen people. I know that Israel was God's chosen people. But I believe there has been something special about America in, of all the nations of the world, since the time of Pentecost. I don't believe that we read of any nation that had its foundation in a belief in God and a desire to pattern themselves after what God wanted. And if you read the documents of our founding fathers and the letters that they wrote, you'll see, I believe, in many cases, more righteousness and more references to God in Scripture than you will hear in a typical church on Sunday morning. They were faithful, and because of that, because they chose God to be their God, just as God chooses all of us to be His children, from that perspective, of course we're God's chosen people. But that's for everybody who hears the call. But we have gotten so far away from that. We've rejected Him. We teach fairy tales within to our children. We make up genders. We kill our children, and it's not enough just to kill our children. Each year they have to pass laws that say you can kill them later and later and later, even to the point now of killing them after birth. And while they say in some states it's still illegal, they also say it will not be prosecuted. When you read of what was happening in Jerusalem prior to the destruction, I don't know that you could read of anything that is more akin to what we see right now. And I realize that there are many faithful people still in America and throughout the world. I don't want to suggest anything different. But I do want you to consider this. Do you not think that there were still faithful people within Jerusalem when Jerusalem was destroyed? Do you not think that Jeremiah was faithful and some of the other prophets that we read about? And yet Jeremiah said, "My prayers aren't heard." That was how serious the sin had got. And this punishment that was coming upon them was to test them, because they could not be faithful in good times. Will they be faithful in bad times? Because God was going to bring a remnant back. And that remnant was going to be so important, because that was one of the big parts, one of the big keys of His lineage to the Messiah. It was going to come down through faithful Israel, not through unfaithful Israel. And again, I realized there were unfaithful people at the time of the birth of Christ, many within Israel, but He had certainly cleansed Israel to a great extent. Now, after all of this, Jeremiah, again through inspiration, says this in verse 20. Well, let's back up to 19. "Remember my affliction and my wanderings, the wormwood and the gall. My soul continually remembers it and is bowed down within me. But this I call to mind, and therefore I have hope." He had just talked about he didn't have hope, but now he's pointing out, okay, there is hope. "The steadfast love of the Lord never ceases. His mercies never come to an end. They are new every morning. Great is your faithfulness." The Lord is my portion, says my soul, therefore I will hope in him. The Lord is good to those who wait for him, to the soul who seeks him. It is good that one should wait quietly for the salvation of the Lord. It is good that a man bear the yoke in his youth. Well, one of the reasons I believe that this is so important for us to understand is when we see sin around us, and when we may be tempted to take part in that sin, especially if we think, well, there's not punishment for it. What was it that the writer talked about as far as he would look? The psalmist talked about it. He would look and he would see people who were living in sin, and it seemed like they just had health in their bones and no trouble. And then he talked about going into the house of the Lord and realizing their end. And that's what we need to do too, because this is one of the things that will restore our faithfulness if it starts to wane. It's this understanding that God demands, even when all those around us are not being faithful, that we remain faithful. And the reason for that is because he is faithful. When we look at the covenants within the Bible, whether we're talking about the Old Testament or the New Testament, it always begins with God's faithfulness. He sets forth, if you will do this, I will be your God, and you will be my people. Now, look at Proverbs chapter 3 and verse 3. Let love and faithfulness never leave you. Bind them around your neck, write them on the tablet of your heart, then you'll win favor and a good name in the sight of God and man. Faithfulness is to be something that is so close to us, so much a part of us, it's like we bind it around our neck. We're wearing this faithfulness. This is what it's always been for men and women of God, whether we talk about the Old Covenant or whether we talk about the New that we're under. In Hebrews chapter 10, verse 23, the writer said, and we looked at this at the very end of the lesson this morning, let us hold unswervingly to the hope we profess, for he who promised is faithful. I see all sorts of things where it just seems like people are wringing their hands and it's woe is me, woe is me, woe is me. And it's this idea of what are we going to do? And instead of realizing if we'll hold unswervingly to the hope we profess, we're going to win because we're on the winning side. We don't deserve to, but we're on the winning side for those who are faithful. But we do need to hold unswervingly to that. And then there's a couple of things that I think are really important for us to consider about God, because as God demands our faithfulness, we need to understand that he is faithful to us first. 2 Thessalonians chapter 3 and verse 1. Apostle Paul says this to the church at Thessalonica, finally, brothers, pray for us that the message of the Lord may spread rapidly and be honored just as it was with you. And pray that we may be delivered from wicked and evil men, for not everyone has faith. But the Lord is faithful. He will strengthen and protect you from the evil one. I suppose one of the great difficulties of this life, the great challenge, is the fact that God does allow us all to have choice. He doesn't allow us to have choice without consequence, but he allows us all to have choice, and most people will choose wickedness. And most people who are wicked do not like the righteous. It's a continual reminder that they're not doing right. When I'm eating a good meal, I don't like to have people on a diet around me. I especially don't like to have people on a diet around me telling me how good that celery is that they're eating, or whatever it is. It's just like, you go with your meal and I'll go with mine. But that's how the wicked are sometimes with righteousness, because they look at that in an unfavorable way, kind of like we might look at dieting sometimes. Faithfulness is something that is beautiful. The Lord is faithful and will protect you from the evil one. It's not just evil people, but the one who influences them, the prince of this world, Satan. And God will protect us from that because he is faithful. In Deuteronomy chapter 7, we looked at chapter 8 this morning in Mark's class, but in chapter 7, in verse 9, it says, know therefore, the Lord your God is God, he is the faithful God, keeping his covenant of love to 1,000 generations of those who love him and keep his commands. How much is 1,000 generations? Well, there were about 62, if you look at Luke and Matthew, between the founding of the earth with Adam and the birth of Christ. Now, some of those generations were a whole lot longer than they are now, but let's take 25 years as a generation. That's another 80 maybe since the birth of Christ. That's 140 generations. And he says he's faithful in keeping his covenant of love to 1,000 generations. It's not going to stop. Even if when this world stops, the point is there is no end to his faithfulness. Now, because of that, we need to be faithful to him. And look what he'll do for us. Proverbs chapter 2 and verse 7. He holds victory in store for the upright. He's a shield to those whose walk is blameless. For he guards the course of the just and protects the way of his faithful ones. Isn't that nice? You look at all the things that people are worried about happening right now. I'm not suggesting we don't need to have rightful concern. But worry, you look at what people, the sky's going to fall over here. The economy's going to collapse over there. We're not going to have the right food. The climate is going to change. And some of these things might happen. I don't know that the climate's going to change. Oh, by the way, I have good news. You know, we were right in the middle of global warming, and I just saw an article this last week that said, wait a minute, the ice is really growing in the Antarctic. We're afraid that there may be a new ice age on the horizon. So get out your, maybe we can go back to our good air conditioning that we used to have in our aerosol cans or something and try and get this climate warmed up. But my point is this, there will always be some concern. Some are ginned up in our minds only or by those who can benefit by it. Others are legitimate concerns. But this idea of God's going to protect his faithful ones. God wants you to do well. When I was working at Kentucky Fried Chicken, I never worried about having enough chicken to cook. I've said this many times, but I never considered one time when we had a load of chicken coming in, you know, I don't know how many cases, 100 cases. They had 9 chickens in every case. So that'd be 900 chickens. I never, ever thought about, look at this. I'm going to take these chickens. I'm going to take them home. I'm going to have chicken to last me a lifetime. I would have been fired for sure and probably arrested. How do you think God feels when we breathe his air and drink his water and use the years that he has given to us for us? When we are unfaithful with the blessings that he gives to us? You don't have to wonder about that. We're going to close in Matthew chapter 25 because he tells us in Matthew 25 how he feels about it. Matthew chapter 25, verse 26. After he talked to the servant, and he still called him a servant, who had buried his talent, the master replied, "You wicked, lazy servant." And then at the end of that passage, he says, "Everyone who has will be given more, and he will have an abundance. Whoever does not have, even what he does have, will be taken from him." Verse 30, "And throw that worthless servant outside into the darkness, where there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth." Those who are not faithful will be lost for all eternity. But look for those who are faithful. Matthew 25, verse 21. When the master heard that the servant had been faithful in using the talents, the master replied, "Well done, good and faithful servant. You've been faithful with a few things. I'll put you in charge of many things. Come and share your master's happiness." That's the key, isn't it? If we are good and faithful, then he is going to bless us with many things, including heaven with he and Christ. I don't know what all we'll do, but I do know that it's going to be fantastic. It's going to have God's happiness there that we're going to be able to share. But that's only for the faithful. The unfaithful will be thrown outside where there's weeping and gnashing of teeth. Which will you choose? And which, if you look at your life seriously and honestly, are you? Faithful or unfaithful? Something to think about. Invitation's open. If you need to respond to the gospel's call, won't you come while we stand and sing?